It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. A happy new year to all of our listeners and callers. So glad you could join us this morning as we bring in 2014 right with you here on Giants.com. With you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Earlier in the week, we recapped the finale against the Washington Redskins, in which the Giants were able to win 7 of their final 10 games to close out the season and cap it off at 7-9. And now the Giants will start to transition into their offseason program, where they'll start to get a list together of all potential free agents that they're interested in. They'll look at their own free agents. So it's a bit of a transitional phase right now, as the NFL playoffs will also get underway this weekend. But for the Giants, clearly they're not focusing on the playoffs. They're focusing on all of the heavy lifting that they'll have to do this offseason, because clearly, as we've discussed in great detail over the last few weeks, there's major areas that they need to improve upon. And the offensive line is probably the one area that comes to mind. They may be looking at potentially needing 3 new offensive linemen out of the 5. Chris Snee, question marks regarding his future, given all the injuries that he's had to gone through. David Boss also has battled injuries this season. Will Beatty is going to have to recover from a broken leg. And then you're talking about guard spots that are going to be up in the air, whether it be because of free agency or players that didn't necessarily live up to expectations. And James Brewer was moved in and out on the left side. You have David Deal on the right side. So the offensive line, it goes without saying, is going to be an area that the Giants are going to want to heavily focus on moving forward. But it's really too early to speculate regarding where they're going to go in the draft, because right now they need to focus on free agency. And once they round out the roster, once they make some tweaks via free agency, then obviously the organization will have a better idea what they want to do with respect to the draft. But you've got to start with mapping out your game plan for free agency. There's about 30 total free agents with respect to the Giants, 23 unrestricted. So they've got a lot of internal decisions to make, John, before they start examining what's out there.
They really do, and I think what people are waiting for is any decision on the coaching staff. Those organizational meetings should be happening by the end of the week. We'll see if the weather has any impact on that as well. If the Giants decide to make any changes in the coaching staff, I think personnel is more of an issue myself. But I think those moves, if they're going to happen, would probably happen by the beginning of next week, if not before then. So it's kind of a wait-and-see process with that as well.
And there's a lot of speculation out there right now, not to necessarily add to the speculation, but Perry Fuel reportedly is being considered possibly for the Redskins head coaching job. So, you know, the Giants are going to get some interest internally from whether it be their assistants or even some of their front office members. There's also reports out there that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may be taking a look at Mark Ross for their GM position. So the Giants could be losing people, not necessarily from their own doing, but because other teams are interested.
And look, Perry Fuel's defense did a very good job this year. I'm not surprised. People of interest, remember, he was also interim head coach of the Buffalo Bills, so he has some head coaching experience as well. I already got my first tweet asking about potentially replacing him with Steve Spagnuolo, so Giant fans obviously very excited about that. So a lot of things, Lance, kind of in the air right now, and with all these changes going around in the NFL, you know, new coaches going in all these different spots, it'll be interesting to see how everything shakes out with these coaches. I'm surprised the Redskins, and I thought Daniel Snyder would try to go the copy route, where he would see what the Eagles have done, the success they've had, and try to pick out the next hot college head coach. But at least for now, they're going after a lot of pro assistants.
You would think that they would maybe try to experiment, given the fact that RG3 is still a young quarterback, bring in a guy that's familiar with the collegiate system and try to build an offense around RG3. But right now, most of the speculation, as you mentioned, John, is about coaches that are already embedded in the NFL. Those are the ones that they're looking at in terms of the candidates. And it will be very interesting over the next few weeks because some teams like to act really fast, mainly because they know that before you know it, they're going to have to look at free agency and start to prepare for the draft. For example, the Houston Texans already chose Bill O'Brien as their new head coach, so he's going to come over from Penn State, and that is somewhat of an attractive option given how their defense is set up and the fact that they're going to get the number one pick in the NFL draft. I know the NBA is right now everybody's focus.
And now they have a college coach to pick out whatever college quarterback he likes the best, which is basically going to be what it's going to be. Bill, you're our offensive guru.
That's right.
You've seen these guys play in college all year. Who do you want that's coming out? You want Teddy Bridgewater?
And he announced he's going in.
You want Derek Carr? Enjoy. Take your pick. And I'd be shocked if it wasn't Bridgewater, to be quite honest with you.
Well, I'd be shocked if they don't take a quarterback. Let's put it that way.
Blown away. I mean, I think I'd quit my job if they don't take a quarterback.
I mean, between what they had to go through with Matt Schaub and Case Keenum, who flashed here or there, but certainly wasn't
not the most
consistent quarterback that they would have anticipated on having. So they're probably going to lean on a quarterback. Then you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers report say they're going to bring in Lovie Smith, who sat out a season after he parted ways with the Chicago Bears. And that's why those reports to Mark Ross were tied in with Lovie Smith. And they may be looking at a college offensive coordinator because they've got a young quarterback, too, in Mike Glennon, and they need to develop him. Lovie Smith is more of a defensive guy than he is an offensive guy.
Go Glennon more your traditional drop back NFL type of pass. Remember, he played at NC State, which was a pro system in college. So I don't think we're going to see like a read option thing come in there. I think we're going to see more of a traditional NFL type of offense.
But you need a guy that is experienced with working with young quarterbacks because he's still very early in his developmental phase.
You know who I think would be a good fit there? Norv Turner. Traditional drop back offense, likes to throw the ball down the field. Glennon has a very big arm. He knows how to develop offenses, develop players. I think Norv Turner will be an excellent fit there for the Bucs offensive coordinator spot.
And that will be determined based on what Cleveland decides to do with its coordinator. Supposedly, I've been reading reports and hearing things that they've told Ray Horton and Norv Turner to start getting the resume out and look elsewhere.
Exactly.
Because they're assuming a new head coach is going to come in and want to select his fair share of assistants. But what's going on with Cleveland, not to get completely off topic, just amazing. I mean, to give 1 year to Rob Chudzinski, considering that, you know, yes, they lost a lot of games this year, John, but they were in those games. It's one thing if you get blown out by 20, 25 points and you think, okay, maybe we made a mistake, but they were a competitive team down the stretch.
Yeah, at no point did you think the wheels came off or I was like, this is an unmitigated disaster. I agree with you. And, look, apparently, you know, Chudzinski wasn't Mike Lombardi's choice, and you know, Mike Lombardi wants to make a different move, and you know, they got turned down by a bunch of people last year, and he was kind of like, all right, fine, we'll settle for Rob Chudzinski, fine. But still, they only give the guy 1 year, especially in a year where you've had a musical quarterback situation where you have to change quarterbacks two or three times during the year. I don't think it's very fair. And you also developed a great young wide receiver in Josh Gordon. Your defense played relatively well.
Very well.
So, I don't know.
And they traded their starting running back, remember, early in the season, which turned out well for them, given how Trent Richardson has produced in Indy, but still.
Or hasn't,
I should say, yeah. I mean, towards the latter stages of the season, he's gotten better, but he hasn't been that impact player that they thought he would be.
No doubt about it. Want to get to our phones?
Absolutely.
Let's go to Andre in South Carolina first. Andre, what's going on, man? How are you this morning?
Oh, hey, I got a question about the pair of fuel.
Yeah.
Like, if he does leave, who would be a good replacement for him? And also, I don't think Lewis Murphy will be coming back next year. So, you think we have a chance of getting Ramsey's Barden back?
Wow. Boy, you may have touched the sour spot with John Schmelk by bringing up Ramsey's Barden at the start of the show,
the
Andre.
The first show of 2014. The first show of 2014.
I got to give Andre credit for that one.
And we hit me right in the face with Ramsey's Barden. That's how we're starting 2014.
Of all the names to bring back, Andre, I tell you. Boy.
Oh, boy. Okay,
yeah, I'm a huge Ramsey's Barden fan. I mean, after seeing that game when he played against the Panthers last year.
Well, in fairness, one good game every 4 years should really get you an NFL job for life. I agree 100%.
But the key question is, look at it from this perspective. You're right. He had a big game against Carolina last season. I'll give you that, Andre. But what did he do after that? What happened?
Yeah, he got hurt, though.
He gets hurt all the time. Every time he flashes something, the next game he's got something else that he can't go.
That's been the biggest issue with Ramsey's Barden. And if you remember right after that, he played against Philadelphia, drew that pass interference call last season, got hurt. and never produced after that. So I think the Giants realize we've got to bring in a more reliable option. I would say the chances of them bringing back Ramsey's Barden, highly unlikely. I think they're going to explore other options.
And by the way, there's a reason no one else picked him up either.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the perfect example. You know, when players leave this organization, a good indication is, do they get picked up elsewhere?
And they never do.
And they never do. So clearly the Giants are making good decisions in terms of parting ways with guys.
Or making bad decisions and acquiring those guys to begin with.
Well,
take your pick.
A little. Interpret it whichever way you may. But there you go.
Andre, in terms of replacing Perry Fuel, I mean, I think the Giants will probably look at Steve Spagnuolo, a former defensive coordinator, if Perry does happen to leave for a head coaching job somewhere. Otherwise, you know, I don't have any good names for you, but I don't know who's going to be out there. But I think they would definitely go with a 4-3 defensive coordinator. They're not going to want to switch over to a 3-4. So I think that's the type of rules you're going to look at when you're trying to replace him.
All right, thank you.
You got
appreciate
Andre.
The call.
Thanks so much for the
you know,
call.
If I didn't know any better, I would have thought you set that up.
You know, it would have
and
sounded
I
like me to do that.
I screened the damn call.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's the funny thing. He didn't mention Ramsey's to me on the call. All he mentioned was Perry Fuel. The first call of 2014.
Tremendous.
We've been doing – he hasn't been on the team for a year. And the first call of 2014, what do I get? Ramsey's freaking Barden. Are you kidding me?
And we haven't even really talked about him during the course of this season. You know, sometimes you get a question, okay, given the injuries, do they bring back Barden in 2014?
Is this what the offseason is going to be like?
I hope so.
Is this the start?
I really do.
Is this what I'm going to have to deal with for 8 months until training camp? Ramsey's Barden? Seriously?
At least we're picking up where we left off in 2013.
I was in a good mood today.
This is great.
I mean, I'm still in a good mood, but geez, man. And Andre's, I love Andre. He's a good caller, but Ramsey's Barden.
Well, speaking of former Giants, our good friend at 7 with a T on Twitter asks.
I know everybody's enjoying this on hashtag Giants chat, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. Any chance Manningham or Hickson come back? Hickson was with the Carolina Panthers, still is, because they're in the playoffs, and Manningham also with a playoff team with the San Francisco 49ers. I think it all depends maybe from a financial perspective whether or not it would work out. Manningham clearly had a very good final season with the Giants. Prior to that, he was relatively quiet, but it came down to opportunities, and Dominic Hickson was probably the best guy they had on special teams because since he left, they have been still looking for a productive player with regard to that. I think it would come down to finances and whether or not those two players would be interested. You know, the Giants sometimes bring back guys that are familiar with the system. For example, Aaron Ross came back last season and he had been with the system. He left briefly and he left because of the money. Remember, because Jacksonville gave him a boatload of money, he came back. It's possible.
Isn't Manningham still under contract, though?
I thought he signed a one-year deal. He was under contract for...
Well, it would be at least... I thought he signed a three-year deal.
I'm going to look that up just for clarification.
He's been with them for 2 years, Manningham. I thought he signed a three-year deal with them. That's what I thought.
I don't know if it was that long. And Dominic Hickson, I believe, only had a one-year deal.
That, I believe, is correct.
I believe
Dominic Hickson is free. I thought Manningham signed a three-year deal with them.
Take a look.
Look, I think the Giants would be open to it, but I think they want to see Reuben Randall. Quite frankly, I think they want to see Jarrell Jernigan now play a little bit. Now, I don't think you love the fact that you have two smaller wide receivers in Cruz and Jernigan playing at the same time potentially, but if they're going to be productive, I'd rather have that than a tall guy that can't do anything.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that perspective. And based on what John Mara said, I think that Jarrell Jernigan right now is that key X factor, the guy that they're probably going to evaluate heavily during the offseason because he maybe showed he deserves more of an opportunity at least. Not necessarily he's going to be consistent.
Thank you. And I think that's the important differentiation you have to make here because let's not anoint Jarrell Jernigan some future star here based on two games and a quarter. And the one quarter against Seattle came when they're playing prevent defense and there's a lot of short passes all over the place, right? And then he plays against the worst cornerback in football, literally, and Josh Wilson in the slot in the final week of the year. So I just don't want to, you know, turn this into, you know, Jarrell Jernigan's the second coming here. You know what I mean?
Manningham, by the way, is a free agent. I just clarified that online.
Oh, really?
He will be on
there
the market, so will Dominic Hickson. And I agree with you with respect to Jarrell Jernigan. You have to look at the tape. You have to look at his production over the last three games and see it for what it's worth. But then again, realize Jernigan hadn't done this in any season prior.
201-939-4513. Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's going on, pal?
Nothing. Question. Will the Giants trade Reuben Randall and a 2014 second-round pick to the Cardinals for Larry Fitzgerald and trade Will Beatty and a 2014 fifth-round pick and a 2015 first-round pick to the Rams for James Laurinaitis and Jake Long?
Wow, Tim throwing out a lot of different speculative situations. And, Tim, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. All types of draft picks that he threw out there. It was hard for me to keep track of everything that he said, mentioning potentially the Giants looking to trade Reuben Randle or Will Beattie. I would say right now it's highly unlikely that they're going to trade either one of them.
Well, from a salary perspective, I really think it's almost impossible for them at this point to trade Will Beattie, to be totally honest with you, Lance, because, you know, they're looking at this point and – if they deal him, all that signing bonus gets accelerated, and I think it doesn't work salary cap-wise, so I think it's honestly almost impossible for them to trade Beattie if they wanted to.
Well, and who at this point would want to take on his contract, given his play this past season, knowing that they just locked him up the year prior? So I think that would make it very difficult in itself.
No, 100%, no doubt about it.
And Randle is still young. You want to see what you can get out of him. I mean, there's no reason to part ways with him. And the two names that Tim threw out to maybe get in return would be Jake Long, who's a veteran offensive lineman who was with the Dolphins, signed with the St. Louis Rams, and then you're talking about Larry Fitzgerald with the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, Fitzgerald's been up and down recently because of the quarterback play, but I think he likes what Arizona's building with what Bruce Arians brought to the table. So right now, the Giants, I don't think they're going to be making tremendous moves via trades. If anything, the Giants have been known for acquiring guys for low-level draft picks. You look at Keith Rivers and you look at John Beeson, but they have not been necessarily part of a recent blockbuster deal where they're going to get rid of one of their own playmakers so that they could take a chance on maybe a veteran. I would think Beattie and Randle at this point, they're not looking to part ways.
Well, why the heck would they trade Larry Fitzgerald? They won 10 games this year. They're going to try to build on what they have in Arizona, not tear it down.
And St. Louis wanted to build up its offensive line with Jake Long. And Jake Long, it's not like he's a washed-up veteran. So that wouldn't fit with either teams.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Ernest in Connecticut. Ernest, you're on with John and Lance. What's up, pal?
Good morning. I just have a couple of scenarios here myself. One is, do you think that David Wilson will return, or what are his chances of returning? And I'm very high on Fitzgerald coming to the Giants. I think that he could teach the younger players, and I think that they need a receiver like that. I also feel that Akeem Nix, I think if they kept him at a lower price, that he could pay dividends in the end because of the offensive line, because of his style of play. So I think that the offensive line not only affected Eli Manning, but I think it also affected Akeem Nix. So what do you think?
Well, Ernest, if I could just get some clarification out of you, what exactly do you mean that the style of play for Akeem Nix is best fit for the Giants and how the offensive line impacted his play? You're talking about getting separation off the line of scrimmage, not having enough time to run his routes. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, he's never been really a speed receiver. So I think he needs a little bit more time to run his routes. You know, he's not like a Cruz, you know, who just dots in and dots out. You know, he's a big play receiver, so he needs more time to develop. And that goes to Eli Manning also. Eli is not really a look at one receiver and going back to the other receiver, quarterback. He just doesn't do that. So I think that if the offensive line is better and gives Nix a little bit more time to run his routes, I think that he'll be a much better receiver.
Hey, look, Ernest, I think it's fair to say that everybody in the Giants was affected by a poor offensive line, but at the same time, you know, you can let Akeem Nix run around for 20 seconds. If he doesn't have the speed to separate from defensive backs, which he really didn't all year long, I'm not sure it's going to matter a whole lot.
Well, he's never been a speed. No, he's a strong.
So how did he get open? It was Ernest. You and a bunch of other people have made this point to me before all year. If Akeem Nix doesn't get speed and doesn't have speed and can't separate from receivers, how the hell did he catch 80 passes? He's only 6'1".
Yeah, but he's a strong receiver. You know, he's a physical receiver. He's not a finesse receiver, and I think he needs a little bit more, you know, time to be able to, you know, the powers. You know, he's not going to break away from anyone. He's never been that way. He's never been a breakaway receiver.
Well, but Ernest, he has shown separation in the past. I mean, you look at that 2011 season.
He was a big play threat.
Some big plays down the sidelines that he made. For example, he beat Patrick Peterson in Arizona. I mean, he had big play after big play. So I think he's shown that in the past, whether it be because of injuries or the offensive line, he slowed down a bit. But I don't think that you need to dictate your offseason so that you can just give Akeem Nicks an extra opportunity, a second or two, to get separation. He should be able to do that on his own, regardless of what the offensive line looks like.
Well, you don't think that they should at least give him a year contract? Cut his pay. That's just saying that the offensive line did affect everyone. Give him a cut in salary. Give him one more year and see how he, you know, does. Just give him a year contract. And then decide from there.
Yeah, but Ernest,
I think that'd be a fair scenario, you know.
Well, but
give him a chance.
Ernest, in an ideal, cut you off, in an ideal situation, you're right. But who's to say Akeem Nicks wants to accept a 1-year deal?
No way. There's no way Akeem Nicks takes a pay cut and takes a 1-year deal, Ernest. There's no way in hell that happens.
Well, it's possible because he said that he.
It's not, Ernest. Akeem Nicks is not going to take a 1-year. $5 million contract to stay with the Giants. It's just not going to happen. You can believe it all you want, but it's not going to happen.
So you think that he would be, that they're going to trade him, or they're going to let him go, and then another team is going to pick him up for more money?
Yes.
That he can get a contract? Well, so, I mean, why would he get a better contract somewhere else if he's washed up? Why not the Giants keep him?
Well, there's always a team that's in need of a wide receiver and is willing to take a chance. That always happens in the offseason. That's how the NFL market works. So, you know, it may be hard for you to believe, Ernest, because you're right. He didn't necessarily put up stellar numbers, but there's going to be a team that is looking for that go-to number one wideout, and they'll be willing to spend some bucks, assuming they have some space on the salary.
Now, Ernest, if you want him back that badly, you franchise him, but then you got to pay him $10 million, and I wouldn't pay Akeem Nicks $10 million for 1 year, would you?
No, I wouldn't pay him for $10. Absolutely not.
That's what I'm saying. To me, Ernest, at the very minimum on the free agent market, he's going to get what Victor Cruz got last year. He's going to get 5 years, $40 million. Would you pay him 5 years, 40, or 5 years, 35?
No.
Neither would I. But that's what another team will pay him. I promise you that.
Well, I hate to see him go yet. I mean, I really think that he has a whole lot left. You know, he's still, you know, young. And like I said, I do feel that he will do better once the offensive line is better. And I think that the running game, and once we get a running game established, another tight end, I really believe that he's going to, you know, that he can be a go-to guy again. I really do.
All right, Ernest, thanks for the call, buddy. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
All right, Ernest,
you're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
Now, look, here's the one thing that Lance could maybe change. If, you know, Akeem Nicks goes out there, works out for teams, and maybe he gets a physical done and they find something wrong with him, that raises some red flags, then maybe that contract number will go down. If people find out there is something health-wise wrong with him that could affect him as a long-term player in the league. But other than that, you got to figure he's going to get minimum $6 or $7 million a year. You got to figure, right?
Well, I was trying to go back to last offseason, some of the wide receivers that were on the market, just to put things in perspective. Mike Wallace is probably one of the big names out there last offseason and was a good wide receiver with Pittsburgh. I wouldn't necessarily say he's a star, studded wide receiver. He got 5 years, $60 million.
So and Marcus, you know, Colston got $10 to $11 million a year.
There you go. That just goes to show you, if there's a team hungry for a wide receiver, such as the Dolphins, which they were in that position last season, you're going to wind up overpaying for a guy, regardless of what his numbers were the previous season.
And if you take a look at it, there's a lot of teams with a lot of cap space this offseason. A lot.
And there's a number of teams that I could point to that need a wide receiver to complement what they already have. That means Akeem Nicks is probably going to get paid. And maybe he is willing to take a hometown discount and he wants to stay with the Giants. But I would think, given the fact that NFL players do not have an opportunity to be a free agent every single year, you need to strike gold every opportunity you can get. And if you're Akeem Nicks, you are going to look for the best possible offer, which is understandable. You can't criticize him for that. That's just the nature of the NFL. You don't get guaranteed money through the entire length of the deal. So you need to strike it right at the beginning.
Most players just get one chance to cash in, and that's their first contract after the rookie deal. This is Akeem Nix's opportunity. If I was him, I'd be doing the same exact thing. 201-939-4513. Justin is in Westchester. Justin, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
What's up,
Happy
pal?
New
Hello,
Year.
Justin. Happy New Year.
You know, it's kind of amazing, 20 years from when Buddy Ryan threw a punch at Kevin Gilbride for his quote-unquote chuck and duck offense, that he's going to be sitting down with the Giants brass today, you know, deciding his future.
You know, the funny thing about it, too, is that by the time the end of the season came, this wasn't a chuck and duck offense anymore. And really, look, I know a lot of people want to blame Kevin Gilbride, but I don't care what offensive coordinator you have. You could not have had a lot of success behind that offensive line. It just would have been impossible.
But you look at, you know, they have the sabermetrics on the offensive lines, and the Giants wasn't the worst in the league. And there's other teams, San Francisco, Baltimore, they had actually lines that were, you know, rated less than the Giants, and they still were able to move the ball. I just think his offense became kind of stale, and like they never moved the pocket or never did something to utilize the best part of Eli's attributes or anybody's attributes. Look at your, when's the last time they did a reverse? And the one time they did it, it actually worked. And Jernigan got a 50-yard touchdown. But, I mean, just look at all the plays. How many, the last game of the season against the Redskins, they ran five screen plays that did nothing. Like, how many times are you going to run a screen play and realize it's not going to work with that play, that, you know, that scheme? And I want nothing to do with Mike Sullivan either. He was a disciple of, if, you know, if they make a move, if they make a move and try to go with somebody else, I don't think somebody in the system. I think you have to get somebody outside the system.
Yeah, Justin, on that I 100% agree with you. I know Dan Graziano's been writing a lot about this on his ESPN Giants blog. And if you're going to replace Kevin Gilbride, why would you replace him with a guy who, by the way, never even coached on the offensive side of the ball until he came here? So the only offense he's ever worked with is Kevin Gilbride's offense. So you want to change on offense, so you replace Gilbride with a guy that runs Gilbride's system. That doesn't make any sense. Now, if you want to bring him in to be a quarterback's coach or something like that, all right, that I'll at least buy as a theory that's plausible. But for him to replace Gilbride as an offensive coordinator is frankly just stupid. It doesn't make any sense.
No, thank you. I mean, Gilbride gave us two Super Bowls. I appreciated everything he did, but being 20 years in the league, you know, that's a long time. I mean, things change on a yearly basis with the offensive schemes. I think it's just time to move in a different direction.
And that's a fair point, and I would agree with you. I would agree with John. If they're going to get rid of Gilbride, then you need to go in a different direction where you get a brand new voice, because then it's basically going back to square one. The thing is with Mike Sullivan, if you're Sullivan and you've gone to already the length of an offensive coordinator, would you even be willing to take a quarterback coaching position?
Well, if no one's offering you an offensive coordinator job and you want a paycheck, you will. I mean, let's be honest.
But I think that'll probably explore other options before he would probably take a other positional coach here within
Understandable.
The
yeah.
Is there any young guys available that you think that might be in the Giants' radar, or is there somebody that's going to go with the NFL, like guys that are getting fired and stuff like that?
Well, I think it depends on who becomes available. You look at some of the coaching staffs that are going to be shaken up. The Lions had Scott Linehan, and John, appreciate the phone call. In terms of Scott Linehan with the Lions, he may be one name. Linehan's been around the league for multiple years. He's been with a various amount of teams. The Cleveland Browns, if North Turner becomes available, he's also been a veteran offensive coordinator who has a great deal of experience. Those two don't necessarily fit in the criteria of being a young, up-and-coming offensive coordinator if that's the direction that they want to head in.
Does Mike McCarthy technically have an offensive coordinator in Green Bay? I know he calls the plays and everything. I don't know what
I'll have to look that up, but Mike McCarthy really is the guy that pulls the strings.
Yeah, but if you love that system and you think that system works, would you bring him in? Who was the guy, the offensive coordinator, that took over for Sean Payton last year when he got suspended? Carmichael?
Aaron Cromer.
Cromer. Maybe you want to bring in somebody to run the Saints system.
Cromer, though, went to Chicago. He's now running the Bears offense.
That's right. Good point. I forgot about
that. So I don't know if you want to lose that type of an offensive hold, considering how productive they've been. I'm bringing up the Packers coaching staff here because the offensive coordinator, you're right, pretty much falls under the radar. Tom Clements. So they do technically have an offensive coordinator.
So I think what you would want to do is you want to bring somebody in that has experience in a system that you think works and can work in this league. So maybe you want to take a look at maybe one of Mike McCoy's disciples, since that offense runs so well in Denver and San Diego. Take a look at one of Sean Payton's disciples, because that Drew Brees offense in New Orleans is so good. Same deal with Mike McCarthy and the Aaron Rodgers systems in Green Bay. I think that's what you look at. You try to find somebody that runs or works as part of a system, and you know, maybe you have to take a quarterback's coach off one of those teams and say, look, you know the system, you could become an offensive coordinator if you believe in that individual that they can do something like that. And you try to build your system here with that basis, knowing it works in the NFL.
And you also need to consider the personnel that you have on the team and whether or not the coordinator would be a good fit. So there's a lot of things that they'd have to toss out there before they would ultimately make a decision, assuming they do part ways with Gilbride. Right now, that, of course, is all speculation.
Right. We're obviously speculating. And once again, and I know a lot of people out there disagree with me, I don't think this was Kevin Gilbride's fault. I think he's a very good offensive coordinator still. And if you had the right players, we know his system works in this league. This league hasn't changed that much in 2 years, where you go from being one of the best offenses in football to your offense no longer being workable. It just doesn't work that way.
If you're Tom Coughlin, whenever these meetings do take place, you're going to definitely make the argument to management it was a personnel issue this season. It was an injury issue more so than the coaching decisions. However, I think based on what John Mara said, saying the offense is broken, they also have their own viewpoint. And it's a matter of which direction they want to go. But they're going to have to meet halfway. It may come to having to sacrifice somebody on the coaching staff. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a matter of time to see what happens what the Giants decide to do. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Barry up in Boston. Barry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. First time caller. How you doing?
We're doing well, Barry. Thanks for calling in. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Just hanging out in the snowstorm here. Decided to take another day off. And
nice.
That always works.
Yeah. Love you guys. Love your show. And longtime Giants fan and grew up here in Boston. And, you know, I'm here in they used to say the belly of the beast in Patriots country. But, you know, it's I sort of represent the Giants up here, me and a couple hundred other people, you know. You know, when they win or lose, you know, you always get it at work or whatever. You go, oh, you know, and this year was tough. You know, this year was tough, whether down at the post office or the variety store or, hey, what happened to your Giants today? You know, that type of thing. And it was a difficult year, you know, but I get just quick points and want some feedback from you guys. And one is Eli. We know about the offensive line and all that stuff. But, you know, when I watch every game, I watch every play. I haven't missed a game in many, many years. The greatest day of my life was down in Indianapolis a couple of years ago at the Super Bowl. And I just – it even seems when he had time, he was just off. Even when he had time, he was just inaccurate, making just really, really – crazy decisions.
No, we agree, Barry. Right? I think that's fair.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't know, it's like, is that just the whole confidence thing? Like, he just thought, like, every time they snapped the ball, he would never have they'd just be coming in, and I just wanted some feedback for that. And then the other quick thing is, you know, how are we going to address the tight end situation here? Are we going to get a tight end? I mean, I watch these Patriots up here, and you know, the thing is we get the Pats, you know, the local game. I watch the Giants, usually at a sports bar, sometimes if they're on, or, you know, the NFL ticket. And then the Patriots are on, and I watch. I'm not a fan of them. I don't really care about them. But it's amazing to watch the two different teams, the offense, and just – it's like night and day. And I'm like, why can't they do it? Why can't they complete a pass? You know? So this is, you know, just my frustration and just some feedback from you guys.
Well, Barry, to answer your first question / statement, the fact that Eli Manning, even when he had time, looked like he was off, I think it's what you alluded to, the fact that he was almost hearing the footsteps 99% of the time, even whether or not the footsteps were there.
Right.
He was anticipating having defenders in his face, so as a result, he was either getting rid of the football too quickly or seeing something that wasn't there. The offensive line, that play threw him completely off this season.
Messed up his mechanics.
Yeah. And that's why his decision-making was completely off-key this season. Was not an accurate quarterback by any means. I think it was at times because he was seeing the pressure, but like you said, even when he had maybe an extra second or two, he was thinking that he didn't have a second or two, and that's why everything fell apart.
Right.
In terms of the tight end play, You very well know, based on seeing what Rob Gronkowski does game in and game out, and the fact when he's hurt, what happened to New England, considering they don't have Aaron Hernandez this season. You know, you need a guy like that that can stretch the field, that can really draw some double teams. So you're absolutely right. The Giants need that type of playmaker. However, given the fact that you've watched this team over the last few years, they have a good track record of even taking an unknown commodity and making him productive, such as the Jake Ballards, the Kevin Bosses of the world. Unfortunately, it didn't work out this season with Brandon Myers because he wasn't known as a blocker. So whoever they bring in, Barry, they better make sure that the first thing that this tight end can do before he even thinks about running off the line of scrimmage, he wants to block, he has the desire to block, and even if he doesn't have the desire to block, he has the characteristics that enable him to be a strong blocker. So that's going to be priority number one for the Giants. They got to bring in a guy that understands in the Giants system, when you're a tight end, you're that sixth offensive lineman.
Bring Howie Cross back.
In an ideal world, they probably would love to duplicate him.
Barry, appreciate the call, my friend. Stay safe
Thanks,
up there with
guys.
The weather.
Keep up the good work. Go Giants.
All right, Thank Barry, you, appreciate the phone call.
Hey, look, and you know my thing. I want a long-term answer and a two-way tight end to come in here and finally solve this problem. I'm done with this. I'm done. I don't want to make my quarterback learn a new tight end every year. I don't want my offensive line worrying about if the guy on the right or left side of them could block anybody. Draft somebody that could be here for 10 years. I want the next Howard Cross.
And I know I'm saying things in a hypothetical situation. If they could have turned out to be true, they probably would have had their answer. Martellus Bennett could have been that guy that I think could have been here for a good 8 to 10 years. I truly believe that.
Well, maybe not that long, well, because he was in the league for a while.
True,
but I get your point.
But he didn't have a lot of mileage on the legs.
That's fair.
So even though he was in the league, he was playing behind Jason Witten. I think he could have stretched if they preserved him right. He could have been that guy. Salary cap did not allow that. That was the big issue. Money was the only thing holding the Giants back from bringing him back into the fold. I mean, that was the bottom line.
You wonder how long he could stay somewhere with his quirky personality, too.
But you know what? I would have thought that that would have rubbed Coughlin the wrong way. It didn't seem to. It seemed as if they accepted him for who he was, and they realized he's a productive player. So I don't know if they would have grown tired of that, as long as he didn't get into trouble off the field, which he didn't. He said crazy things to the media, but he wasn't an issue off the field. He was fine.
The Black Unicorn.
There you go.
201-939-4513. Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's up, pal?
Hey, Happy New Year, fellas.
Happy New Year,
Steve. Hey, man, I just want to comment. You know, I just want to go ahead and compliment you guys on an awesome show, man. I'm so glad I got this show. I'll get to voice my opinion, man. Appreciate him looking forward to 2014. I tell you, I was listening to Mr. Mayor, and I realized, man, we did not give the ownership, enough credit, man. You know, they've proven to me that they're way smarter than all of us. You know, and their fans, I liked everything I heard coming out of Mr. Mayor's mouth, everything. Even the bad, just the way he sees everything, from the empty stands to the players to the coaches. You know, I like the way he's going about his business, the respect he's given to, Tom Coughlin. And, guys, I have a couple quick points I'll try to make real quick, and then I have, a question. But, the one thing is this. The offense is definitely broke, guys. I kind of hear that y'all really don't want to give Gilbride the blame. But, the only reason I say that is because when you talk about Eli, you say the offensive line, this, that, and the other. The same thing with Knicks. I'm really not going to go off on Knicks. But I do think there's an opportunity to give him a one-year contract, not necessarily under the franchise, because I think he wants to be a Giant. And I think he realizes that he still has something to prove. After this year.
Steve, I agree with you that he wants to be a Giant, but I think he wants to be a Giant at the right price.
Well, here's the thing. I think Mr. Mara likes, Knicks, and I think he believes in him. I think, just like the other caller was alluding, it's our offense. And the thing is this. The one common theme is everybody seems to be not knowing where they should be at on the field as far as our receiver. Too many times was there, misreads between the quarterback and the receivers. All over the place, all year long, delay of the games, all kinds of stuff. That's coordination, and that directly falls on the offensive coordinator. It's not a sacrifice. He's going to get fired, and he needs to be fired. And, I feel strongly about that. It's not personal, but he has to go. He has to go. The one thing I wanted to say, the reason I called in today because I wasn't just going to listen, but you brought up Perry Fuel right at the top of the show, and my heart just – let me tell you, this guy, our defense has played well this year. We went a couple years where the defense was really in question. I think the Mara family showed some loyalty in keeping him around. He better not go to the Redskins.
Well, Steve, hold on one second. Jay,
sure.
I want to look something big picture with you here before we say goodbye to you. Number one, you just said the offense is broken with Kevin Gilbride, so you want to make a change, right? Yet you say at the same time, after 2 or 3 years where the defense was just as bad as the offense was this year, you're giving ownership credit for showing patience and letting Perry Fuel stay. So why not show that same patience to Kevin Gilbride after only one bad year when Perry Fuel had 2 or 3?
Well, here's the thing, guys. I mean, the thing is, first of all, our defense was never as bad as the offense.
No. 32nd in the league, Steve. Dead last. Last. 32.
Let me just take a couple quick points, man. I'm trying to give credit. I know it seems like, you know, it's a double-edged sword here, but I'm not a Gilbride fan. I just think that, you know, we spent way too much money in the offense to protect our main, you know, asset, and that didn't get done. I realize you can't spend money all over the place, but it's just, you know, it's just a combination of things, like I was saying, from the delay of games, you know, to the players not living up to what we think they're capable of playing, you know, to the level that we think they're capable of playing at. But, you know, back to, you know, I just think that, first of all, I really don't want to see Spagnuolo come in. I think we should really look at Charlie Strong if a defensive coordinator needs to be replaced. I don't want to see Perry Fuel go, and I'd be happy to see him get a head job, but not to the Redskins. I mean, that one, man, that's too personal right there. And one quick question, guys, before y'all hang up with me. I just want to know, was John Mara said, kind of alluded in his interview that he hadn't thought much about whatever team is going to be in, you know, playing in a, you know, being in our locker room, but he did say that, you know, there'll be a couple teams that will kind of bother him more than others. I want you guys to just speculate or guess what teams he doesn't want to see in the stadium. You know, guys, that's all I got for today, man. But I tell you, thanks for taking my call. You know, I just think it's, you know, obviously the offense is broken, so we got to change there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, next year. So thanks for taking my call. Great show, guys, and I'll be listening.
All right, Steve. Hey, thanks always, Steve. We appreciate it as always. I mean, who wouldn't the Giants want to have in here? I mean, I think anybody in the NFC East, I think they'd probably hurt them to see Philly in here. Not that the two organizations have, you know, a bad, you know, thing between the ownership groups or anything, but whenever you see a fellow division team in here, you wouldn't want to see that, I wouldn't think.
Though there is one team that I think they wouldn't mind having here. I think it'd be the Carolina Panthers. What do you think?
Dave Gettleman.
Right?
Yeah.
And some of the former Giants. I think there's ties between both of the organizations. It would be almost like a sign of respect.
Yeah, I don't think you'd like to see the Niners here, no. Especially since the Giants beat them twice and, you know, beat them in the playoffs a couple years ago to the Super Bowl.
The Packers, because of the history in the league, I think they wouldn't mind necessarily.
No.
Because remember, the Giants, the Packers, the Steelers, those teams have are
yeah,
tied.
Yeah, I agree. The Packers are a classy organization. I don't think that would kill them. The Giants, Niners have a rivalry going back a long
Correct.
Way, which is why they wouldn't probably like that too much. The Saints always seem to smack the Giants around. I'm not sure they'd be thrilled to have the Saints in there either, to be honest with you. And those are the NFC teams.
And they don't have to worry about the AFC teams.
And the Seahawks were a little mouthy, I think, in that game this year. I don't think they'd love to see Seattle in here.
Especially after getting beat 23-0. I don't think you want to welcome that team into the facility. Real quickly before we get back to more of your phone calls.
Sure.
201-939-4513. And by the way, you can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to a few of your tweets. I see some questions up here about some other former Giants, how likely it would be, whether or not they would return. But Steve from D.C. was throwing out that possibly Akiem Nicks would be willing to take a one-year deal at lesser money, and I know we got a few other phone calls on that topic. But, you know, if you're Akiem Nicks, you have to look at it from this perspective. Victor Cruz just got paid this offseason. Victor Cruz deserved to get paid, given his track record and his level of production. But, you know, Akiem Nicks was here before Victor Cruz. He was viewed as a number one wideout that they were going to build around. So if you're Nicks, you want to get paid as well, regardless of whether or not your production met what Victor Cruz brought to the table. So I think that's something that has been eating at Akiem Nicks throughout this season, and it's something that he's certainly going to talk over with his representatives, and that's why I don't see Akiem Nicks saying to himself, regardless of how badly he wants to return to the Giants, I'm just going to take less money in a one-year deal, when he's seen Victor Cruz get paid and he's seen plenty of other wide receivers get their fair share of money.
That he
it
probably thinks he's better than. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It doesn't add up. That's why I would say, for those of you banking on that happening, I can't see it.
Guaranteed
see it coming
money.
To fruition.
At this point, there's one thing Akeem Nicks from a business standpoint, and make no mistake, this is his livelihood. This is his business. This is his one chance, probably his entire life, where he's going to be able to cash in. He's going to make the most of it, and he should make the most of it. Guaranteed money. And a one-year contract's not going to give you enough guaranteed money. Want to go to our next caller here at 201-939-4513. Len in Maryland has been waiting patiently. Len, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Len.
Good, good, good. I get the feeling 2014 is going to be...
Well, that was close.
Len.
Len may have very few words in 2014.
Well, you know, the snow's coming up the coast, so maybe something's going on down there in Maryland. Len, give us a call right back. We lost you. The line's still up. The audio's gone. It's strange. We didn't get a click or anything or a dial tone or nothing. So, Len, give us a call back when you get a chance. We'll get right to you. Let's go in the meantime to Mark in Marlboro, New Jersey. Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Mark.
I was just bringing up some, my dad and I were just talking about the Giants and some ways to fix them, and, you know, he believes in going to the draft, but I always believe you want to get a good mixture of veterans and rookies to play together because it always seems to work well that way.
That's fair.
And I wanted to bring up a few names that I thought might be good additions to the team. Running back-wise, obviously, I want to see Peyton Hillis back. He did a phenomenal job when he was with the team and healthy. And, on the other side, I know Paul Dottino is bringing up a guy by the name of Ben Tate from Houston, but another name I'd like to see the Giants look at is LeGarrette Blount from New England, who has fresher legs than Ben Tate because he wasn't used as much.
Now, Mark, I hear you on LeGarrette Blount, and Lance Meadow has mentioned the same to me before. Here's the problem with LeGarrette Blount. The guy cannot hold on to the football. He's a fumbling machine. He was in Tampa. And he is again in New England. And there's one thing Tom Coughlin will not stand for. It's lack of ball control. I think he's a good runner. I really do. But he cannot hold on to
the
football.
He's not as bad as Ridley, though.
And another thing with the wide receivers.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Hey, I'm just putting it in perspective here.
Yeah, and another thing with the wide receivers and even the offensive line, two things I was thinking of is, let's say you don't bring Akeem Nicks back. Do you maybe bring in a veteran wide receiver like a Jericho Cotru who has sure hands, who's very talented? He's going to be on the end of his career, so he's going to get less money. Or maybe even bring in a Jeremy Maclin on a, like one of those show-me contracts where, hey, you're hurt last year, we'll give you a year contract, you show me what you can do, and prove us that you're still the player you were in Philadelphia at an All-Pro, and maybe we'll bring you back next year.
Yeah, Mark, I think you're on the right track there. I don't think the Giants will break the bank on a wide receiver just because they're hoping Ruben Randle will develop into that guy, or now maybe Jarrell Jurdigan could develop into a guy they can rely on. But I think they will bring in some veteran insurance, a guy that's been successful for a long time, knows the route tree, will be where Eli Manning expects him to be, has good hands, maybe has a little bit of a size to him as well. I think if they do bring in another wide receiver, and I think they will if Akeem Nicks doesn't come back, that's the type of guy they're going to go after.
Yeah, and my offensive line idea was to maybe, I don't know if you keep Kevin Booth at the center because he did a great job, but if you can bring him in, I'd love to see Evan Dietrich Smith or Michael Orr on this offensive line. I know Michael Orr is not a left tackle anymore. He's a right tackle.
Right.
But he has experience playing both sides.
Yeah, and, I mean, Evan Dietrich Smith is a really talented center.
No, he is. He's an excellent player. I think that'd be a good fit.
And I did want to bring up, if Perryfield does go, I would love to see Spagnuolo back. I know he had a rough year in New Orleans, but I don't know if that was a case of, you know, not having Sean Payton with him. And even in St. Louis, I think he was in a lose-lose situation there because that was like a revolving door of wide receivers and players that they never really set a team for him to get used to. So he was sort of on the losing side. No matter what he did in St. Louis, he didn't have the talent that they never gave him the right talent. And he has success with the Giants. I'd love to see him back.
All right, Mark. Thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat as Mark threw out a couple of different names that are going to be on the market. Jeremy Maclin is an intriguing name given the fact that he's going to be coming off the torn ACL. And the Giants have a track record of taking some chances with guys, even their own, such as a Terrell Thomas, a John Beeson. I'm just a little concerned, given what happened this season, do they want to even go that direction and take more risks? I think they want to look for more certainty, John.
And I wonder with Jeremy Maclin how much money the Eagles will be willing to give him. I think the Eagles will probably be more willing to give him money than a team outside because they know the type of guy and player that he is. You know what I mean? Usually when you have these ACLs and things of that nature, the team that has the player is usually more willing to give them money than the team on the outside.
Well, I don't know what the situation is for all their wide receivers, but given how Riley Cooper developed and blossomed, you know, they may be saying to themselves, hey, we can let Macklin walk. We don't necessarily have to bring him back. I just wanted to double check. Cooper is a free agent.
Oh.
So with Cooper on the market, actually maybe there is somewhat of an urgency to bring back Mac.
And I think if there's one thing that Philly offense is missing, it's one more big play wide receiver. I think if they can get a guy that can really beat you, because look, when the Eagles have had issues this year, it's when teams man them up outside, they play tight man-to-man, they put a guy over the top on DeSean Jackson, and that's how they beat people. That's how teams beat the Eagles, excuse me. And I think if they could bring in another wide receiver that could be a game-breaking threat on the other side, and you match up one-on-one then, other teams are going to have trouble picking their poison between Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, Sean Jackson, whoever that new wide receiver is.
Well, I don't know necessarily if there is an urgency factor there because, remember, they did have two tight ends that were very productive. So instead of having three wide receivers, you get away with two very good tight ends who are not just blockers, but they could stretch the field. And Zach Ertz and Celek, I think, did that for the most part.
Let's try Len in Maryland one more time at 201-939-4513. Len, let's try that again.
Yeah. Hey, good morning. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year, Len.
What's happening?
Happy New Year to you. Look, I hope this, for me, I hope it's not like last January. It seemed to me last January with no playoffs that January lasted 55 days. I know the calendar says 31, but boy, again, it's going to be a long, long January with no playoffs. I was pleased to hear, I think it started on Monday, maybe with Lance. Lance said he's tired of the tight end situation. Sounded really frustrated.
That's me.
And repeated it, although using different words today. And I was gratified to hear that. You know, it's time for us to get, you know, I've been tired of that offensive line and getting pushed around. And, you know, people are concerned about Eli's accuracy and they're getting tired of the accuracy. And so I think Mr. Mara had it right. The offense is broken. And, you know, for Jerry and Tom, if the owners, and I'm sure he's speaking for Mr. Tisch, if the owners say the offense is broken, I wouldn't put too much of an argument up regarding whether the offense is broken or not. Now, I don't know what that means in terms of Kevin and what that means in terms of wide receivers and offensive line, et cetera. But I think we just, at this point, with Mr. Mara saying it out loud, you know, Jerry, get it fixed. And I think he's, you know, one of the challenges, well, I think the biggest challenge, guys, in the next 4 years, and let's you know, put a horizon on Eli here, 4 years, we're going to play the Redskins, the Cowboys, and the Eagles 24 times.
Yep.
We're going to play the Jacksonville Jaguars once. We're not preparing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're preparing to figure out how to go 16, 17, 18, and 6. 16 and 8, 18 and 6 against people in our division.
And those are three offensive-oriented teams that are either going to try to throw the ball or run it on you with some very talented people.
You just look at the quarterbacks and compare. Look at the running backs and compare. Look at the left tackles and compare. You know, how do we score enough points? I mean, that's going to be the challenge. You know, the general manager's got to have a vision. You know, how do we get to years 2, 3, and 4 and continue to win? You know, the day-to-day operations, coaching the guys, developing the talent, et cetera, that's the coach. There really are two jobs there. I know you know that. Most people know it. Anybody that tries to do it with one person today doing the whole thing is ridiculous.
No, it's too hard.
It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
It's too hard. I mean, it's really two jobs there. But Jerry's challenge is how do we get to 16 and 8? Hey, listen, kudos to Mr. Mara on another point. I was really gratified to hear him say, not that I didn't think he felt this way, and I know Mr. Tisch feels the same way. Mr. Tisch is in the entertainment business. He understands this when Mr. Mara said that the fans deserve better. Again, I knew that's the way he feels. But to come out and say it, as a longtime season ticket holder, 5 stadiums, I go back a long time, guys, 5 stadiums, it's gratifying to hear him acknowledge the fans and the fact that we deserve better. I think, and then to take some questions on it, too, and the references went into empty seats and things like that. But I think he was a man about it the other day, and I'm glad those two guys got control of this team from an ownership standpoint. I think the future is going to be bright. We've had a bad year. Some people will say two. But I think with these guys running the organization from the top, the right questions are going to be, they may not have the answers, guys, but I get the feeling that both those guys are going to ask the underlings, the people reporting directly to them, they're going to ask them the right questions. And, you know, leadership is interesting, particularly in these large organizations. It's not so much that one person could get a handle on an organization that's got 250,000 employees, but they're able to ask the right questions of the people who are helping them run that company. And I think Mara and Tish are in that, you know, are at that point. And so, I'm, you know, maybe it's not going to happen next year, but I think long-term the future's you know, the future's going to be bright. I wish Hakeem was going to be with us. I just somehow can't get – I don't know. I can't get in the same paragraph with the idea that it's really going to happen. I think the handwriting's on the wall with, you know, with him. And, hey, guys, it's been a great show this year. And I'm not necessarily looking forward to the off season because we're in the playoffs. But you guys, all the folks, Paul and Anita, probably going to make it a little easier as we go through the year. And, again, Happy New Year. And I hope it's a prosperous and healthy one for you guys and for the New York Football Giants.
Thanks,
hey, we'll
Len. Thanks,
later.
Len. Appreciate that.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. Happy
Thank
New Year,
you.
My friend. Thanks for calling in, and welcome to 2014. And look, and I think this is what I made the big point after Monday's press conferences.
Yep.
Excuse me. If you're a Giant fan, you have to be very encouraged by the way, not only what John Mara said, but the way he said it. You could tell how much he cares and understands the issues of the team and how he's going to go about fixing them. And this is why I think for Cowboys fans, it can be so frustrating sometimes listening to Jerry Jones. Because he says things that, as a Cowboy fan, you're like, do you really believe that? I mean, seriously, dude? Do you really believe what you're saying? You didn't have one of those moments yesterday on Monday when you were listening to John Mara. Not one. Not one.
I said the same thing early in the week. When he talks, it's not a bunch of BS. There's substance there.
It's there. He goes
and
right to the point.
That's the one thing you have to take away from that.
And that's why he picks and chooses his spots.
Correct. And Len mentioned that he was very open even to answering questions, and they threw a lot at him, and I think he handled it fine.
Oh, handled great.
So he understands the issues that are at hand in terms of needing to fix the Giants. They're not naive, and as Len mentioned, they're going to have very productive meetings, I'm sure, over the next coming days, hash, talk things out, and then have a game plan. However, with all that being said, the one thing that I took away from the press conference that John Mara mentioned, even though they have major holes on this team, they're not going to break open the piggy bank and say, here's $10 million for you, here's $10 million for you, and here's $10 million for that guy. They've got to be financially sound in terms of how they make some of their decisions. So you're right. They have to be aggressive, but they have to be wise at the same time. And I think John Mara shared those sentiments with the media, shared those sentiments with the fans, that in situations like this, you would think that, oh, man, you do a lot of heavy lifting. You make sure that you go out and get big-name free agents. But if it doesn't add up and it puts you in a very bad situation moving forward, that's not a very wise game plan.
Think I could, like, send a tape of that press conference over to James Dolan on MSG? Think that can work?
It could be a seminar.
Dude, that would be
throw
perfect seminar.
Throw the tape
seminar.
In and learn life lessons from it.
A lot of life lessons to learn, too.
A lot of owners in any sport could learn.
They really could.
And the other reason why I think when John Mara speaks, you at least listen and you say, okay, wow, he's understanding the issues at hand, because he also picks his times wisely. When do you hear from John Mara other than after the season's over?
Never.
See, Jerry Jones, you hear from him every single week. He does a radio show, so it's hard to...
It's amazing when you think about that. Could you imagine John Mara doing a weekly radio show?
Of course not. And that's another example of how different organizations are looked upon in different lights over the course of sports or during the course of the NFL season, because of how they have ownership, address the media, who represents the organization. With respect to the Giants, the only guy you hear is Tom Coughlin during the course of the 16 games.
And you get Jerry Reese at the bye, and that's it.
After the season, then you hear from everybody, and that's fine, because that's when management should be talking.
It's a united voice during the season. The only guy that's running the show is Coach Coughlin.
A lot of other teams don't necessarily have a game plan set where during the course of the season, this guy handles it. During the offseason, this guy handles it. I think the Giants at least have a structure from that standpoint. You may not always agree with the moves they make. You may not always agree with the decisions they make. But you know what? There's structure. There's stability. And that's a lot that they have a lot going for them in that department than a lot of other teams you could look at.
Let's go back to our phone to 201-939-4513. Jason's in Phoenix, Arizona, and Jason's going to be fortunate enough to avoid all this crappy weather coming up the East Coast. Jason, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing well, Jason.
Hey, so first of all, I love the show. I listen daily.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I am going to call today and talk about Kevin Kildrop, but just give me a second to get a couple points out.
Sure.
I think, all right, so when we talk about, I took two things away from the meeting, the press conference. Number one is when Mara said the offense was broken, of course, and when Jerry Reese said, out of respect to people who have helped us win a lot of games, you know, I'm going to wait until we talk to Tom Coughlin about any changes about the, you know, whatever, touchdown. What that tells me is everybody knows this is about Kevin Gilbride. It's not about, you know, this year was a bad year, blah, blah, blah. We paid Eli Manning $100 million. Well, I don't, you know. They paid him $100 million, all right? We don't need Eli to be in such an inconsistent system where every time he drops back, he has to wonder, okay, I thought I saw cover three, but now they're going to cover two. I hope Akeem Nick saw that. I hope Ruben Randall saw that. I hope he's not going to run the slant this time, because if he does, he's going to run into, you know, Myers or somebody.
Yeah, but Jason, in fairness, that system has worked consistently since Kevin Gilbride has been here. They've been a top 10 offense every year but two.
Okay. Now, see, I disagree with that. Now, of course, you can say,
oh, it's numbers. You can't disagree.
Offense,
it's a
right?
fact.
Okay, great. Okay, okay. But a top 10 offense, how you got to look at the talent we have with Plaxico Burress, with Kevin Boss, or even Jeremy Shockey, and Amani Toomer, for example. Even then, when we have those struggles, you can look back and go, well, Eli threw for 3,900, he threw for 4,000. Right. Eli should be a top five quarterback, hands down. All right. I've watched Eli from every single snap since he was his first snap in college against Tulane. All right. And I'm telling you, with our talent this year, with even Brandon Myers, you go, well, we need a two-way tight end. Do you know why we need a two-way tight end? Because Kevin Gilbride makes us have to have a two-way tight end. Because when Eli drops back, you better have 5 seconds. Because we're running deep, long routes. Who knows when these things are going to end? Just hope you have time and you're reading the same thing that another guy is reading while DeMarcus Ware is coming at you. I mean, I hear what you guys are saying. Look at Aaron Rodgers. I think that Eli Manning is a better throwing quarterback, passer, reader of a defense than Aaron Rodgers. But when Aaron Rodgers drops back, he already knows. This guy's running the slant. That guy's running the post. This guy's on the seam. If I have this coverage, I'm going to this guy. If I have that coverage, I'm going to that guy. There's not a lot of questions about it. The variables on their route are not as large as Kevin Gilbride. Now, I'm not going to just say Kevin Gilbride's a horrible coordinator. He's great. Actually, I think he's a genius. But I think you outsmart yourself when you're playing against a team that, hey, we're not trying to play a genius game with you. For example, if I'm playing, you know, Mortal Kombat, I mean, just take a guy for a minute. I have my little nephew come over. The guy comes in, just hits buttons, and he's kicking my butt. I'm trying to run combinations all of them. I'm trying to do all the, you know, the stuff you do against somebody who's strategizing against you. Meanwhile, this little guy who's coming in just to play what he does, they're beating me. That's what happened with the Panthers. The Panthers are going to drop back seven. We're going to rush four. We're going to play cover three. We're going to play cover two. We're going to mix in some man coverage. That's what they did to us. We could not. We were trying to figure out, you know, make some type of rocket science scheme to beat it. And we don't need a rocket science scheme. If you look at the All-22, Brandon Myers is open like 5-7 yards off the scrimmage almost every single time. You know why we're not throwing to the tight end? Because the first read is to the guy outside to make sure the defense is playing a certain type of coverage. But he's not doing that. So we're going to look over and hope that the guy on the, you know, our flanker or whoever the other receiver is going to make the right route at the right read. But, and also, the problem with that is, if I'm watching you guys on tape, because we did win the Super Bowl, you have been the top 10 offense forever, we have to figure out how to stop the Giants. Well, people start putting it on tape. When you watch the Giants, you know, okay, if I show Eli this coverage and I play his receiver this way, these are the routes they are going to run. I'm going to wait until he sees me playing this coverage and I'm going to jump the route. That doesn't take rocket science. You know, we're talking about people who get paid to come up with a way to stop Kevin Gilbride. The guy's great. He's good. But if you don't have Mario Manningham, who's been in your system for 4 years, if you don't have Hakeem Nicks, who's, you know, an all-pro receiver, Victor Cruz coming out making big plays, if everything is not perfect, this offense is going to consistently be inconsistent. Regardless of a top 10 ranking, I'm telling you, we should you look at Tom Brady and you say, well, he's been a stability. His offense changes all the time. They were not always a two tight end offense. You know, they get offensive coordinators, new minds, keeping things fresh. They allow Tom Brady to come to the line and know what the plays are and know what his audibles are. When you say, well, a lot of those bad plays are because of, you know, Eli changing the bad plays. Guess what? Eli has three plays to choose from, all of which come from Kevin Gilbride's playbook that he says, okay, in this formation, you only have these three. You see people, other quarterbacks, they'll change to a shotgun. They'll come out, you know, get somebody, you know, put some people in motion in a double tight end set, you know, run some different type of plays. We have to come out, you know, oh, well, we have this personnel. This is the play that's called. We only have, you know, two other pass plays and one other run play we can go to. Well, you know, and that's it. I think we've been figured out. That's why I think it's just, I love Kevin. I love the fact that he's so smart. He puts people in, well, whatever. If they know his system, great. But it's time to go. Jarrell Jernigan should not have taken 3 years. You go, well, he's not an all-pro receiver. Ramsey Barton's not right. That's great. But you know what? If Jarrell Jernigan knew all he had to do was go run a slant and try to beat his guy on a slant route, I think we could have used him. I don't think we could put him out there in Kevin Gilbride's system because, I mean, you know, it takes 3-4 years to learn this stuff.
Well, but Jason, with that being said, then how do you explain a guy like Jake Ballard, who was only here for a very short period of time and flourished in that offense?
I'll explain it to you. Some people have a high football IQ. Some people can see, okay, you know what, this is what they're doing. This is the play I'm going to make. You take a guy like Brandon Myers, who's from a West Coast system, he's never had to do this stuff. So and you go, well, you know, that's his fault. No, it's our fault. We brought the guy here. Kevin, make it work. The guy don't know how to block. Let's start running routes that need 6-7 blockers. If they're blitzing us, the guy's open every single time, throwing the ball.
Well,
for the blitz, throwing the ball, but it's not in our system.
And, Jason, I'm not going to disagree with you that the system is somewhat complex. I think that goes without saying. But I think that there were certain adjustments that were made during the course of this season. Remember, early in the year, they were not dumping it off to running backs, and Manning was not getting rid of the football very quickly.
Man,
but when Andre Brown came back, they did make adjustments.
I agree, but let me just say this. You can't say, okay, well, it's not working, so throw a couple slants, throw it to the running back. First of all, how successful were those slants? How successful were those passes to the running back? Yeah, we got 5-6 yards. That's great. But we're not breaking stuff open because it's not in our scheme. We can come out there, we can go, okay, we're going to run some short routes this week. That's not going to fix our problem because the offense is not geared around getting people open. You can say, well, Hakeem Hicks hasn't been getting separation. Anquan Boldin doesn't get separation either. But there's times when he's wide open. You know why? Because they run routes to put their receivers in position to make plays. Jarrell Jernigan was put in position because Kevin Gilbride did not have another choice. He couldn't say, well, Victor Cruz is never going to make a run out of this complicated stuff. Hakeem was out. Everybody's like, you know what? We just got to give the guy the ball. Give the guy the ball. When we do that, it works. Now, I'm not saying he's not competent. He could do that. He's just such – listen, when you've been as successful as Kevin Gilbride has been, you don't want – it's hard to stop and change what you're doing. Just like you're saying, well, it's been successful for 10 years. That's what he's saying right now to Tom Coughlin. That's what Tom Coughlin is going to go say to the mirror, and they're going to go, hey, that you can say all that you want, but when it's time to make an adjustment, when it's time to make changes, can you guys tell me, other than 2011, when we had every single part on offense, like the offense was perfect, can you tell me a year other than that year – where we did not have lulls in the season that Drew Brees does not experience, Tom Brady does not experience, Peyton Manning does not experience, Aaron Rodgers does not experience, even Tony Romo doesn't experience this type of stuff. Look at these interception numbers. It's not been, first of all, now this is going to sound crazy, but Eli is the Kobe Bryant of the NFL. What do I mean? Kobe will shoot any shot because he thinks he can make it. Eli will take a shot because he has confidence. I can make that, bro. I can get this open. He will do that. But you have to also consider, well, Eli, if you don't know what the wide receiver is doing exactly, and the wide receiver is not exactly sure that he's doing the right thing, are you guys running as efficiently as, you know, JaMychal Finley and Aaron Rodgers, you know, or Colston and Drew Brees? You know, it's not fair for us to judge Eli the way we do about his, you know, passer rating, his, you know, incompletions, his interceptions, all that. It's not the same as these other quarterbacks because they don't have to come to the line. Eli sets the protection. Eli sets the run play. Eli sets the – it's too much stuff going on. When you guys say execution, maybe he's giving them too much stuff to execute.
All right, Jason, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. And Jason did throw a lot out there. And listen, there are a lot of different elements to this Kevin Gilbride offense where Eli Manning does have to make some changes on the go. That's been well documented during the course of this season. But you can't overlook the fact, regardless of whether or not you want to criticize Kevin Gilbride for not making enough adjustments, that this was a year in which the offensive line was decimated by injuries and Eli Manning's decision-making was off. You can't overlook those factors, and I think that also contributed to why Kevin Gilbride's offense was basically in a funk.
And quite frankly, Lance, when Eli did have the time to make throws and could set his feet, he didn't make accurate throws. I want to go back to one of the things that who was that calling? Jason said earlier in his call where he said Eli Manning should be a top five quarterback in the league. Let me tell you, I've never seen Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Peyton Manning, who I consider the top four quarterbacks in the league, miss as many wide open wide receivers as Eli Manning did this year. Wide open guys. That's not on Kevin Gilbride.
Well, and the other thing that Jason threw out, he was saying that, you know, under the Eli Manning, Kevin Gilbride offense, you have a point where Manning sometimes doesn't know what routes his wide receivers are running. Hey, that's fine if you want to say that there's a miscue between him and Jarrell Jernigan, there's a miscue between him and Lewis Murphy because they just were brought into the offense. But how do you explain the fact that Eli Manning, the majority of his interceptions this season, John, were thrown to Akeem Nicks and Reuben Randall, guys that he practices with every single day? So, yes, okay, maybe some decisions are being made at the line of scrimmage, but it's not as if there's no familiarity between those guys.
And by the way, it's not like if you change the offense, you're going to eliminate those. Watch, look at these other teams that have different offensive systems. They still have miscommunication between quarterbacks and wide receivers. It's not like it only happens here. It doesn't happen elsewhere. And quite frankly, Lance, let's be honest. Of his interceptions this year, how many were because those guys weren't on the same page? I don't think it was even a ton. To me, it was more the defensive back being stronger to the football than the Giants wide receiver, Eli simply throwing a bad pass. I mean, I think maybe a few early in the season to Randall that way. But to me, most of the interceptions to Nicks had nothing to do with Nicks running the wrong route and Eli throwing it to a different space.
It was just a matter of Akeem Nicks quitting on his route sometimes. And like you mentioned, the defense just being more aggressive to the football. Or Manning throwing it behind the receiver and not hitting the guy in stride, which happened 90% of the time.
Inaccurate throws. I'm happy that this guy can be our final call of our first show of 2014. Vic in Connecticut. Vic, how are you? Good morning. Vic, how are you, pal? Sorry about that.
I'm good. I had this really succinct, calm thought all written down, and then Jason got me so fired up, my heart beats about 190 over 180. So.
All right, so go with the anger first, and then go with the succinct thought after you get out the anger.
Well, I got my car warmed up. I'm going down to fire Gilbride myself. I mean, I might as well just do it and kind of put him out of his misery. But I think we ought to have a contest where every year a Giant fan wins, and he gets to sit in the war room with Reese and Mara and Coughlin and help to discuss some of these things. Because I vote for Jason. Let him go this year. Let us get his two cents in. But yeah, I got 100 things to say, but I kind of lost some of the luster listening to Jason a little bit. He kind of covered a lot of them. But
Vic, we have an entire offseason to get in your hundreds of points. So pick out a couple and let's roll with
it. All right, I'm going to rip off a couple now. I'll save them for later on. I have a couple questions for you, but I just have one quick comment first. And it kind of goes along the whole lines of Gilbride and the offense and whatever. And I never could get this, so I'm either the smartest guy in the world or the dumbest guy in the world. So help me with this. During the season, Eli said repeatedly, and I think maybe some of his receivers may have said the same thing in some context, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, you know, we just really weren't on the same page. We never got on the same page, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that goes back to the Gilbride system of, you know, making a left or a right depending on what you see down the road. So to that I say, they've been in the system forever. I mean, at least a couple of years, you know, Cruz, Nicks, you know, Akeem and Eli. They had 6 weeks of training camp. They had 16 weeks of the season. I kind of feel like Keyshawn Johnson on this one. You know, come on, man. How can a professional athlete and somebody as smart as Eli continually make that comment, guys? I look at my life. I always kind of draw things back to the business world. If I forgot my job along the way during the year for some reason, I'd get fired. So help me to understand how these guys – know the system. They know the route trees. They know the lefts and the rights they have to make. But they tend to say, we really didn't spend enough time together.
Well, Len,
I struggle with that.
Well, Vic, what I would say is that I think a lot of times, quite frankly, the players on this team and in general will give that, oh, we're not on the same page, we're not in a good rhythm answer, because it's a good generic answer. Because like you just said, you can't really pin them down on what the problem is and whose fault it is and what's wrong. And the last thing these guys want to do is say, yo, man, you know, for example, Ramsey Barden's a dope. He doesn't know how to run the right route. Travis Beckham doesn't run the right route, so it's his fault. I threw the pick, but boy, I did the right thing. Those guys are morons. They screwed me up. You know, you don't want your player saying that, so you give the generic, oh, well, you know, we're not on the same page, we're not in a good rhythm. So I think sometimes, frankly, a lot of it is what I like to call player speak, where it really doesn't mean anything. So you're sitting there trying to figure it out when it's really just a generic statement that I think players use so they don't throw some individual guys under the bus. You know what I mean?
So it's just a benign comment is what you're saying, basically.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not, but I think many times it is.
Okay, and that's fair. I mean, I see Eli, sometimes he'll pat his chest and say, my bad, after a throw, or sometimes he'll give the old, you should have hooked when you should have zagged motion, like
yeah.
Looking at the receiver. So, okay, I'll go with that. It kind of irritates me, but I understand.
Well,
that,
Vic,
yeah.
Coaches do the same thing, too. You have to keep
yeah,
in
you're
mind.
Right.
You know, they don't want to throw a player necessarily under the bus. The best example that I could give you where an actual coach broke out of his shell was earlier this season. Jason Garrett actually said Tony Romo audibleized out of a play against the Green Bay Packers, and that was why he threw an interception, because the coaching staff wanted to run. But most coaches wouldn't throw their quarterback under the bus under those circumstances.
And I remember a couple years ago we had that situation here where Corey Webster and Antrel Roll on a play were kind of pointing back and forth on who screwed up on that A.J. Green touchdown.
Oh, yeah. They were all pointing and looking, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
The other question I have for you, and I have one last comment, and then I'll get lost. But, you know, everybody's talked about the Mirror press conference. I think he's a terrific guy. I mean, he has a way of telling you things in a very calm, collected way that kind of, you know, they get through. They're kind of like a fatherly comment, if you will. But,
yep.
I think he made some great comments, and I think he gave us some clues into the future. My fear is this. You know, he's pissed off. Reese, well, you know, I'm sorry. I like Jerry Reese, but he's a talking head sometimes. He doesn't tell you a whole lot in his press conferences.
That's fair.
And Coughlin, you know, he's just Tom Coughlin. You know, he's everybody's father. He's just a professional guy. But it all seems like at the end of last year, they all lined up like this year, and they all said the right things. We're tired of this. The seats were empty. Reese, you know, maybe I drafted some bad guys. Coughlin, everybody said the right things. But I felt like that was like the morning after. Now as the week rolls on and they're meeting today, tomorrow, next week, I'm hoping that strong language continues on, because I heard the same thing last year. And the only thing I really think that they fixed from the previous year to last year to this year was the defensive line and stopping the run, and they
Fair.
Did a terrific job bringing in guys to do that. They
That's
were
good
men
point.
Of their words, you know. But I'm afraid that sometimes they say things and they go, yeah, you know what? But we're a conservative organization. But you know what? We don't have a lot of money. You know what? We don't like to overspend on free agents. And they go, you know what? We're good where we are. Let's play next year. That's just my feeling. And I'm not saying that these are dumb guys because they're not. But that's kind of my feeling. But the last thing I want to say to you is, John, I put something in the mail to you. So don't think it's like from some weirdo or whatever.
Oh, this
but it's,
is gonna be good.
I felt the need during the season. I was thinking, as Christmas kind of came along, I was thinking about the 12 Days of Christmas. The song
oh,
was in my head. So I wrote something for you and Lance. It's a parody on the 12 Days of Christmas. It's called The 16 Days of the Season. And so when you get it, again, don't be afraid to open it.
Vic, right, I appreciate it. I look forward to getting in the mail. Thanks a lot. Happy New Year, and I will talk to you soon as this offseason unfolds. I think by next week we might have a little bit more to talk about based on some of the moves that you want the Giants to make.
All right, take care. We'll talk.
Thank
All right,
you,
Vic. Good
appreciate
hearing from
it. You. I'm getting gifts now.
Well, John's been dying to get some fan mail, so I can't thank Vic enough.
Well, usually it's just my job to make sure Papa's fan mail doesn't have any anthrax in it.
Well, now you're getting your own. And now you need somebody else to check whether or not
exactly.
there's anthrax. And I'm not taking that job.
No, I was going to nominate you, actually. So, Lance, we'll see. I think we're going to have some more answers in the next 3, 4, 5 days or a week. And we'll see what the Giants end up doing off of this bad year.
One thing that I wanted to piggyback off of what Vic said he mentioned that last season they looked at the major issues, chose to shore up the defense against the run, improved. Well, if we take Vic's logic, then you know at least they're going to shore up the offensive line, which is where everything else struggled because of it.
No question about it. And I think that's an important move, and I think they'll take care of it. Lance?
Everything needs to branch off of that.
Excellent work as always, my friend.
Sounds good.
For Lance Menno, I'm John Schrock. By the way, tomorrow we will not have a show because of the inclement weather. Today, basically, Lance and I had to produce, host, screen calls, stream, do everything ourselves.
Sacrifices
we've made. Next week, no one else is going to be – tomorrow's no one going to be here either. So no show tomorrow, but we'll be back with you next week, and we'll take your calls on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great weekend. Happy New Year. Survive the snow. We'll see you on Monday.